from where they are. I'm coming now, I'm coming to you.
It's a matter of time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we're discussing the 2009 Zack Snyder film, Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from Almost Famous Minute.
I'm Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
And I'm Mark from the Doom Patrol radio podcast.
And I'm Nathan from the DC Cinematic Minute podcast.
Well, guys, where you been?
We were caught in a interdimensional time rift. Nate, say something from Deep Space Nine. Say something from Voyager.
No. Voyager has... So, you know the amount of times we make fun of, like, Geordi and, like, his just space jargon.
Yeah,
and
I
stuff.
Gave it a neutrino burst, and it just
Voyager takes it...
What would Neelix say right now?
Oh, my God. What would Neelix say right now?
Yeah.
Captain, I was defending our stand with the hydrogen... I don't know, some bullcrap about some other bullcrap, man. And if you want to even go later on, I was going to say, once they get 7 or 9, she just starts just yammering about random Borg crap. And it makes less sense than any of the Geordi LaForge stuff from Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong, I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I love it. I can't get enough of it. It's just,
Deep Space Nine set the bar too high.
Deep Space Nine set the bar too high for literally any other production that I will ever see.
Anyways,
we somehow got
caught in between time and space. But yeah. We're back, baby. We're doing it live.
It's great to have you. So this is minute 170, and it starts with everyone watching TV and ends with Night Owl telling people what not to do.
Don't even think about it. Don't even.
Yeah.
Don't you do that. I'm going to keep going. But I decided not to.
So there's something that this minute kind of showed me or made me realize, I guess, that I really don't like what happens in the book between Adrian's proclamation of I did it and when Manhattan follows Rorschach outside. Like the space that this minute covers here in the movie is so much better, I think, than what it is adapting from the book. I know that's, probably not the popular opinion, but
it's unorthodox to say something like that.
Yeah. But, like in the book, they're all discussing what this means and how they can't expose Adrian, they can't kill him, and that's when like Rorschach starts to leave, and then Adrian starts making a few puns about blotting and stains, and it feels real weird. And then Dan and Lori, like, they take off to go have some alone time, and then that leads into some completely other scene. And yeah, just because I basically reread this issue of the book in preparation for this week, and I love what this week and especially like this minute and yesterday's minute. I love what they do so much better with this section of the story.
I'm going to be echoing you,
okay,
in this very episode. So
cool.
I think we're already two sides on this. Film does this part better than the book, but I guess Nate.
Yeah, Eric? I mean, yeah, I agree, because a film has to do something that a book can't do, and that show things like non-facial acting. And you have a room full of these actors that are realizing, the plan. They're seeing that it happened. There's nothing you can do. It's all this news and information is coming to them all at the same time. Whereas a book, you get silly quips, you get puns from Adrian, you get the things that a book would deliver, especially a comic book, where it's just little jabs here and there. You don't have just panels of people staring at each other. You don't have the weight of the situation kind of being fallen on a room full of actors.
Yeah. And then you also have like an adaptation that's 20 years apart.
Sure.
And then we're setting it up for a more modern age take. Everyone writes stories. And I said this yesterday about Zack Snyder. I say the same exact thing about Alan Moore. Like, not a god, not a perfect person, makes mistakes. They're, you know, even when Nate and I talk about DC films, sometimes we got to go, hey, this is just not this. There could have been a better way to do it. And with Alan Moore and his writing, it's like there's a lot of things, the foundation of Watchmen itself, the book, does a lot of things right. But, you know, there's parts towards the end, and there's, you know, just certain motifs that the characters do that, you know, someone who's adapting, you know, they're taking it and adapting it to a different work, they might go, well, maybe leave that behind. You know, like maybe we'll do something better or something. You know, we've given it 20 years to think about. Maybe this is a little bit better. And it's like one of those things where it's like, you can say that you're going to do something better. Like, you don't have to follow in the footsteps if the foundation is bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why don't you guys tell us, we're going to pretend we're people who've never seen Watchmen or read the books. How is this different from the book?
Well, there's less less tentacles here in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
the goal is really just to release a giant space monster, right?
Basically, teleport a giant space squid alien into
fake.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it's meant to have been alive, but it died upon impact, sort of thing. Like, it teleported inside of a building, so it was like parts of it were coming through Madison Square Garden, I think, for the big Kristallnacht concert or the Pale Horse concert or something that they had been.
That's where they shot the movie Godzilla.
Yeah, yeah.
The Matthew Broderick one.
Yeah.
So just imagine Godzilla like half hanging out of the garden. And then just the psychic terror that unleashes kills, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in New York the instant that it arrives. And so, yeah, I mean, the movie couldn't, or they didn't, you'll want to take the time to set up all of the necessary interweaving, like, you know, there's an artist who comes up with the idea of what it would look like. And there's the team of geneticists who figure out how to make it. Then there's the scientists who figure out how to replicate Manhattan's powers. And so you have all those three, or I'm sure more groups all working together, whether they know they're working on the same thing or they know what they're doing. This is all Adrian scheming and doing all this stuff to just make it look like aliens are attacking the world. And then the book kind of ends with Manhattan just still kind of being over humanity and deciding to leave. And there really is no connective tissue, I don't think, from the squid stuff. And I guess, I don't know, here it makes so much more sense to frame Manhattan into making the world think that all this energy was released by Manhattan. And then it makes sense that he leaves then, you know, he's not, I mean, he's not like running from the world but he's over humanity, you know, he's.
Yeah.
Is there any of us here that prefers the book version? Are we all in agreement that we prefer the film?
When I, it's hard. It's I see them as two different endings. And when I think about the book's ending, I think of it more as a okay, you fill in the blanks, because I didn't get a lot of exposition of this alien. I mean, like, yeah, they tell you that the alien was created to cause a bigger threat to humanity.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was more fill in the blank, reader fill in the blank. Like, that's what that is. Because I feel like I remember reading it the first time. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, a giant space monster did end up fighting and then the book was over. Well, that was weird. But then the movie, it's like it turns into a political debate. It turns it into Manhattan wanting to leave humanity because he is a scapegoat. And that's his window out versus just like, instead of the blame falling upon him, it's just, oh, you need me to leave.
Yeah, yeah. Eric mentioned yesterday perfectly that it's like Nolan's Dark Knight, you know, we need Manhattan to be the enemy. So it makes sense for him to bear this the blame.
But, I think the norm has been that people will criticize this difference in ending compared to the book. Normally, the argument is that making Dr. Manhattan the scapegoat for this piece based on lie, it's faulty because Dr. Manhattan is seen as a product of America. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that you are going to blame a product of America, and somehow America and all the other countries are going to now be at peace when they should be saying, America did this. We should all just be pissed at America. Like, we should, like, this is their fault. Like, they created Dr. Manhattan. Like, they are the enemy. Like, now all the countries, even if they line up, America has ties and they would try to force countries to be on their side of it. And so that's the argument normally, is that this decision that Zack Snyder did to make Dr. Manhattan the enemy in this master plan is wrong because America will still seem like the enemy, like, amongst all the groups.
But I was going to say, well, Superman. So, like, Superman, the debate of Superman being the enemy is lying on the allegiance that he has towards the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up a lot more in recent Superman stories, but it's the same exact thing. Why doesn't this world see Dr. Manhattan as Superman? What you're saying is exactly right, Mark. If they did see the destruction, they would still be mad at the U.S. for creating Dr. Mm-hmm. Manhattan that has aligned with the United States.
Yeah.
But they don't. But in every other book where, you know, Superman is that problem, they all mm-hmm. say, like, oh, yeah, well, he's USA. That's bad. He's American.
Yeah, he's fighting for the Americans. One of the reasons why... Oh, go for it.
Real quick, I think it helps that New York and Los Angeles got attacked by Manhattan.
Oh, okay. Maybe that, yeah.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I think this ending works so much better, and why I try to diffuse that argument that America would still take the blame for all this, is that America gets affected, and not only that, like, it's not just America that gets hurt. It's like every single, like, isn't it multiple? It's all around the world that these explosions are happening, right? Yeah. So it's not just America being hit. It's not just New York being hit with a giant squid. It's about how these nuclear explosions are happening all over the country. So they're all being affected. But then also, like, America at this time, America is like this top tier nation, right? Like, it's like this AAA country.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is happening is that even if in this universe they go, hey, America, like, owned Dr. Manhattan and he did this, we should blame America.
Right.
This works more in favor for the United Nations to chain down America. Sure, they might say, like, oh, we're now working with Russia, we're best friends now. But really, what you could say if you wanted to blame America for creating Dr. Manhattan is going, no, you fucked up, so now you have to abide by what we're saying. And now America is now brought down from that top tier, and now they have to work with everyone else. Like, now you're... It's almost like slapping America's wrist for having Dr. Manhattan in the first place is peace. Like, you're being punished, now you have to... Now we're all going to be equals. We're all going to be at peace, and we're going to make sure that everyone does what everyone else says. And it's like, you could... If you make that argument, you're also, like, helping the situation that America is no longer USA. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
it's furthering that. And also... with making Dr. Manhattan the villain, in this minute, he says, this is how you preserve peace. And it's the word preserve that I think is the most important, because if it is just a monster that shows up, then you clean the streets, and then over time, that monster's not going to show up again. Sure. So it's just like, it's temporary peace. But Ozymandias has convinced Dr. Manhattan that this is the solution, and Dr. Manhattan, he accepts it. he can preserve that peace.
Right.
He's agreed to it. There's peace now. And now because he's willing to help this thing out, from now on, there will be peace because they're preserving it. Like, they're going to be working to preserve that peace from now on.
Yeah.
And so it's another thing where it's like, you made him the villain because you knew he would accept the role. Mm-hmm.
And as long as he's gone, the threat remains and people will, you know, fly right for probably a good long while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so much that this does better. And I guess thinking like, okay, well, what's the long-term solution? Mm. Not the immediate fix, not the Red Scare or Squid Scare, if you will.
That was good. I like that.
The title of the episode.
Yeah.
But like, this is how you do it. This is, I don't know. This is just, like, you're getting the Fall Guy to accept it. And I think the Dark Knight is a good way to say it, where it's like, yeah, blame me because then you guys will be at peace.
Yeah. Overall, I love the dialogue in these minutes. When Dan says peace based on a lie, the peace based on a lie is such a perfect phrase, I think. And it takes me back to, made me think of the overall core message of Watchmen that I think Alan Moore was going for. And it's that superheroes are flawed. And, it might seem heroic, but heroes are damaged and broken people. So the people behind the heroic act, if they're terrible people, does that make the acts that they go out every night and perform, does that tarnish those acts? Or as long as the civilians see a cat getting, rescued out of a tree, regardless of the fact that, the guy might go and hit a prostitute, the next moment, I don't know. But I think I think that's what Alan Moore wanted people to think about when he wrote this. I imagine someone, a longtime reader of comic books, to finish this story, and then the next time they go to pick up Action Comics and read about Superman, I think Alan Moore wanted those readers to think about Superman in a different light, and wonder, does he struggle with impotence, or does he ever go to Lex Luthor's place and in the middle of the night and sit on his bed and cry? So I think that's kind of the point of Watchmen. I think this line, the piece based on a lie, is a big part of that I never really considered before.
Oh, I definitely think it influenced Zack Snyder, because that's exactly,
The Dawn of Justice. There's a lot of that in Dawn of Justice. It's even in the first freaking 10 minutes of that movie. Pious American Fiction. It's just that right there. Pious American Fiction is comic book heroes that are all USA and they can save the world and all this stuff. And it's a lie.
It's innocence.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is that. And so it did influence people like Zack Snyder, who then read Superman books and then said, but does America want Superman to save that child, kind of thing? I think if that's what Alan Moore wanted, then he succeeded.
Oh, yeah.
And then I guess the real debate comes back to the foundation of that. Is that the right thing to do? Should we be questioning superheroes about the actions that they take? And I think that's where the debate should be. If Superman was created in the 30s to be a form of escapism, if I was supposed to read Superman comic books and escape to a world where a loving person like Superman came in and swept me off my feet and saved cats out of trees and like busted bank robbers, should he be kept that way because that's how he was originally conceived? Mm. Or should we be doing the Alan Moore, Watchmen thing, where we start to go, well, if we want to adapt Superman if we want to think about superheroes in today's world, there would be a lot of political debate about the actions that they're allowed to take.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's where the preference debate comes in. How should the characters be treated? There's no how they should. You will never win that because that's purely subjective, but it just comes down to preference, I guess. But I don't think there's anything truly wrong. I don't think Alan Moore was wrong in that sense to question superheroes. I definitely agree that a lot of them are broken and a lot of them are crazy. And I think that's what it was when I was starting to really get into Watchmen, you know, a few years ago when I was starting to watch these movies again and really start to understand Rorschach and be like, this dude is mentally and like unfit to be anywhere. Like this dude is, it's a whack job. He's just insane. Like, and it's just one of those things where it's like, that's the people you see on the street who in like our actual world are trying to be superheroes. Like we have people who dress up and try to fight crime and it takes some mental illness to do it. Would any of us be on Team Rorschach in this? Are we letting this happen?
It's a real meta question.
Yeah. Right?
We see the outcome. Like, we see the plan. We see all of it in the movie. So it's hard to put ourselves in the shoes of Dan or Rorschach or Silk Spectre or anything like that.
Yeah. It's definitely this coming, you know, leading up to, you know, getting to these minutes throughout the movie, you know, like this sort of stuff hasn't been on my mind because, you know, in the first, second act of the movie, we're not dealing with this sort of world, I guess, mass casualty sort of thing. But now we start to get to it. And this time around, I feel like it's been easier for me to understand Adrian's point and see what he's doing. And, you know, it's also easy to watch this and think just like Rorschach that, you know, evil must be punished. And then, but if you think about it, like the damage is done. So who benefits from Adrian being exposed?
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to side with Adrian, but at the same time, it's like, I mean,
what's the alternative?
Yeah, yeah.
What is Rorschach's alternative? Like, what?
That he goes back into town and starts beating up criminals and sex traffickers on a nightly basis. Like, just, I think the alternative is the rut that these heroes imagine themselves in.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative is the heroes thinking that they're still in the glory days of them hitting the streets and fighting crime, when really they're not. Mm-hmm. They're adding to it.
And so what is Rorschach like? Is Rorschach? There's already so much mental instability with Rorschach that I'm quicker to disagree with him. His whole thing about no compromises, sure, is the biggest red flag I've ever seen in a character. Where it's like, there are people who love Rorschach for the no compromises thing, and to me, it's like, yeah, but he's not kidding. Like, he's like, there's no, like, there's never a moment. It's almost like it's in his DNA to not compromise to a very unhealthy level. And so this uncompromising of like, this is peace, like right here in front of your face, and you still don't want it because you want quote unquote justice, no compromises. It's like, yeah, dude, you gotta go. Like, what happens to you has to happen to you. And it's like, I agree with Dr. Manhattan's decision, because this whole life, trying to live your life with this no compromises thing is too much. It's too far.
Right.
And you know, there's that, but then is there also like, is he that side of Batman that it's like the dude cannot ever give up that mask,
right?
Like he is like, yeah, he doesn't want to. Yeah, he doesn't exactly want peace.
I mean, he calls it his face in the movie.
Sure.
Yeah, but he doesn't want peace. He doesn't want. He wants.
Well, he's to fight criminals. He's cynic enough to know that crime will never go away. So he knows that he'll always have a job. He has the best job security in being a crime fighter, because there's always going to be crime.
I think it's related, you know, related to your question, asking us in the room of what our thoughts are on it and on Rorschach. And I essentially had two questions going into, you know, that I wanted to kind of try to suss out a little bit. I mean, the first one's a little funnier, I think, or should be quicker to figure out maybe. But it's really just my point. It's without Dan, could Rorschach have made it back to New York City? You know, it's really just, you know, he knows he's walking into death. I think
that's interesting. Yeah, never thought about it.
Is that saying that physically Dan is not there? So I mean, Archie isn't there. So how did he Daddy get to Antarctica? There. Antarctica?
Yeah,
North Pole, wherever that Antarctica.
Something. No, I'm saying going back.
The return journey. Yeah.
Not arrive.
Yeah. So like, what is Rorschach's plan to get into getting back into to begin with? Is he jumping back into Archie and planning to fly it back there, or is he gonna walk?
I feel like in the book he mutters something about returning to the Owl ship. So I guess his plan in the book is to get back into the ship and fly and return to the States, I guess. Here we don't have that line, and we also don't have any indication that he would be able to pilot the ship or get it off the ground if it still needs repairs of some kind. So, yeah, I don't know. I kind of like on one hand, I like the idea that he knows he's walking out into the frozen, you know, death. But on the other hand, I don't think Rorschach would ever commit suicide like that or knowingly. I mean, he came to Antarctica thinking that they may not survive, but he did that in the pursuit of justice.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rorschach would have kept going. He would have had that Mexican standoff with Dr. Manhattan, with like, either you do it, or I'm hijacking this vehicle. I will make, even if I have to walk, even if I have to swim. Like, Rorschach is that mentally, like, unhealthy where he would try to swim back on a piece of ice on, like, that dude. Like, he'll do it.
Sure.
Like, I believe him. And he'll do it. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, I don't think he walked out of this huddle with the idea that, you know, this was going to be where he died. I think he was just like, I need to get off and I need to get
out. I think it's more just like, I can't be in this room.
I figured he was already on his way out to figure out how he was going to get back and tell the truth.
I thought it was just more short-sighted, where it's just, I can't be a part of this decision. Mm. You guys have your own secrets. This does not involve me. So I think he was just walking out.
Yeah, I could see that too. Like, just, you guys can form your secret society. I'll be over here writing letters to the New Frontiersmen and telling everyone that Adrian killed half the world. Eric, you said you had two questions.
That leads right into that second question. Is does Rorschach want to explain more fully?
I hope so.
Than what he did in his journal.
Yeah, I'm real suspect of how thorough his journal was and how much proof he provided. And yeah, I'm real suspect of his note taking.
But then, so now, you know, if he goes back with a story, people will believe him. Yeah. You know, what is he going to say that would get people to believe him?
That's the big question of.
Well, there we were.
I mean, that's
Adrian Veidt and Dr. Manhattan and Silk Spectre and Night Owl and I were standing around and discussing the end of the world.
That's the big question about Watchmen. Like, the way it ends is a kind of a close up on that journal. So, and we don't know what happens with it, you know.
But like, when is it mailed?
The day before they headed out to Antarctica. They dropped it through the mail slot of that the newspaper.
So the truth isn't there yet. What does that mean? How does it end? Does it end with like him saying, "All right, we figured out that it was Voight Industries or whatever, and we're on our way over there to bust some crime"? Like, the end.
Pretty much.
I mean, I think what he
pretty close.
I guess provided was enough information to lead people to look into Adrian, I guess, and to get that to head down the path of discovery, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So what are you saying, that Rorschach wins in the end?
I mean, in my head canon, kinda, because I've always read the book and watched the movie thinking that the truth is going to come out. Now, in the way that we've kind of been going through this, like, I don't know how reputable the newspaper is that he sent this information to. So I don't know that it gets published and then read, and anyone even, you know, regards it with any faith, or, like, you know, I don't know how good of a paper this is that he's sending it to. Because he subscribes to it.
It's supposed to be like a conspiracy kind of paper, I'm pretty sure.
It's a paper that he, like, can't wait to get the next issue of. So I have to question, like...
Should have put Lois Lane's name on the package. Right there. Lois Lane Daily Planet.
Should have mailed it to the Marx Brothers.
And it would have been...
Well, I know Travis has heard it, but you, Mark and Nathan, you want to hear the final entry?
Yeah.
Oh,
Rorschach's final entry, Vite's behind everything. Why? What's his end game? I cannot imagine a more dangerous opponent. Used to joke he was fast enough to catch a bullet. He could kill us both alone in the snow. That's where we're going now, Antarctica. Whether I'm alive or dead upon this reading, I hope the world survives long enough for this journal to reach you. I live my life free of compromise and step into the shadow without complaint or regret.
I'm surprised a journal doesn't get caught in the blast.
Right. Yeah. That's funny.
Part of me is on this fence. I mean, I really like Ozymandias and Dr. Manhattan. I like their intelligence. I like the strategy of it all. Mm-hmm. And part of me is like, I hope Rorschach doesn't win in the end. And I think it was a good decision to kill him off. But it's like, it's still a good story. I still enjoy I like the character a lot. But I enjoy the character for, like, knowing how broken of a character he is. It's kind of like that Sam Peckinpah type character, character arc or character figure. And so it is one of those where I go, man, I hope the piece doesn't get undone, because that's not what I'm here for, kind of thing. He's a good character.
Let's see, all throughout this minute, or for the most part, we get long looks at kind of everyone's reaction shots, and especially Dr. Manhattan, and there's just something about it that we haven't seen this look of confusion, I guess, as he's kind of still looking at the TV screens, and he's thinking about what everyone's saying and what Adrian's saying about exposing him would lead to all of nuclear destruction again. And I just love the way he just realizes, like, he's right, you know. And it's just, I really love the work that they do on those reaction shots. And that's kind of going back to a little bit of what we were talking about, like, with the book, you can't really have those long reaction shots. You know, you can have a static mm-hmm. panel, but there's mm-hmm. no indication of the passage of time and that sort of thing that movies can do so well with, you know, score and a dramatic pause, that this scene in particular just nails. Like, everyone just gets these real downtrodden looks. I mean, Dan finally gets it, I think, here towards the middle of this minute. He doesn't like it, but he gets it. So he kind of looks down at the ground, and even Lori, she's saying, we can't do this, but she, I think, will also understand it, you know. But
yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about.
Sure.
But it's like, first of all, the there's something that Nate and I talk about a lot with Henry Cavill when he plays Superman, because in Man of Steel and in Dawn of Justice, he doesn't have a lot of lines of dialogue,
right?
Which isn't a bad thing. And there's a lot of things that he does great, which we call nonverbal acting. Mm. I'm pretty sure there's a better term for it, but nonverbal acting has been so important to us. And it's like, in these moments, you have Dr. Manhattan, who is a not fully CGI character, but
that's a question. Is Billy Crudup at all standing in that room with them, or is there just a big buff guy? Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's standing
there. Yeah, he's wearing a big light up pair of pajamas, so he's providing the light for the scene, and then the facial performance and everything. So yeah,
okay.
He is this super intelligent being who is being educated, right? And so it there's things that Dr. Manhattan has to do as a character to give off that idea that this character is learning, distraught, but accepting of this new future. And it's like, it's the nonverbal acting that sells it, but some of us don't acknowledge it. Mm. Some of us don't comprehend it. Like, we understand what they're saying with, like, if we interrupt this piece, it leads back to the doomsday clock. And it's like, to us, like, those words mean, the words make sense, but what's really selling it is the nonverbal acting. And it's so important that it's like to see that and to have actors do that. Like, I feel most of the time what we do is we cut corners and everything is just a line of dialogue where it's quickly said and maybe there's like a debate for it, but then there's like an answer to it again. And it's like, everything is done in the writing, in the screenplay, in the dialogue, but none of it, like, we need to go back to this where it's like the nonverbal acting is selling those things. Mm. There's many moments in Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice, both Batman and Superman, where they do these things without saying words, and people are like, oh, why didn't they explain this or that? And it's like, it's in the eyebrows, it's in the muscles around the mouth and all that. And it's like, it's there. They're doing it as actors, but you're not getting it,
yeah,
kind of thing. And with Dr. Manhattan, it's one of the greatest things to watch him try to study human beings and process information and
with no emotion.
When you see characters like that, it's like, when you understand that, then it's almost like you can feel the wheels in their head turning as they try to process this information. And that's good acting, in my opinion.
Well, and just going right to what you said about nonverbal acting, it, especially in this minute, the exchange between Dr. Manhattan and Adrian, as Rorschach says, keep your own secrets, and leaves, you know, it's you know what's coming. It's so foreshadowing, and as far as nonverbal acting goes, I think it's some of the best. Just the way Manhattan gives that look to Adrian, it's so telling of what has to be done. And Adrian kind of responds to Manhattan by giving him a look of just, yeah, you know what you have to do. And even Dan, so it's kind of a three-person interaction, because Dan, you know, he speaks up here at the end because he understands what that look is about and tells them, you know, don't even think about it. So I just think it's just a beautiful bit of acting.
Yeah, it's this book, Watchmen and The Dark Knight Returns, it's almost like if they were the same superheroes, The Dark Knight Returns would have been the sequel of Watchmen, where it is like, that's what happens when you let Rorschach go.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, Superman, whatever, Dr. Manhattan, Ozymandias, they impose peace, right? You're all done. You're all retired. Mm-hmm. This is peace now. We're doing great. And Rorschach, you know, gets slapped on the wrist, and he goes out there. But then it's like, you let him go, and then that happens. Like, then you have someone stirring up trouble again, and then now you have to send the Superman out there to fix it. This is like, I'm just going to go nip it in the bud right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out there. I'm going to go put this dog down. Like, that's it. And so this is like what that is, where it's like, okay, if we want to preserve peace, like we just talked about, this is step one of preserving peace, which is making sure that all the loose ends are tied up.
Yeah, cut out the outliers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it helps to, for one thing, it's like, this is our first time in a very long time in this movie when all of these characters are even sharing the same space. You know, we don't get a lot of, we don't get a lot of scenes where they're all, where it's more than two characters paired up. It's generally, you know, two of them at a time. But here, when they're all together and they're talking about preserving this peace, that means that they're going to have to get their hands a little dirty. You know, that Adrian set off these bombs earlier that killed millions, but none of them had to get their hands real dirty, except for Adrian earlier, you know, days and days ago, he's had to do things to keep these secrets, but
yeah. And it's good that it's, again, the ending that they chose, that it's on Dr. Manhattan,
yeah,
versus a squid monster, where it's like, you know, this is the first time these five characters are kind of like, we've seen them in the past, and now we're seeing them right now in the present day, and it's the climax of the film, and it's their moment where they're all here again together, and it's in the climax of the film, and it's not ruined by the giant monster that they would then have to explain how it got there in the first place. Like, I think that's one of the problems with that version in the book, where it's like, if this was a movie, like, this movie starts out with the bombs being made and all that, like, everything that happens at the end of this film, like, you've seen it at some point during the film, and so, like, it's all a gradual build-up to this, and it all makes sense. To introduce, to throw the monster in there, like, now you have to spend time trying to explain it, mm-hmm. and why it's there, and it's better that it's not ruining this moment between the five characters who've known each other for so long, mm-hmm. and to the ending that happens with them, it just stays with them.
Yeah.
Your core cast of characters.
Hmm. That's a great way to put it. I like that.
So there was the thing I said 3 days ago, which I think I might have said tomorrow then, but you know, what you guys were just talking about is happening, that his, you know, he's becoming loyal yeah. to Adrian. And is that part of the loyalty of Bubastis mm-hmm. intermingled with him? Why he's doing that? Is that a possibility? Maybe.
That's a good one, and I'm glad you brought that up. It's hard to say, because it's like you...
I feel like, the way that I would say no is because I feel like Dr. Manhattan, when he went to reanimate himself, he'd be able to separate... yeah. himself from a cat, but also I do like that idea that part of the loyalty somewhere in the molecules stuck with him, so it almost kind of makes it seem like Dr. Manhattan isn't the most perfect superhuman super being, mm-hmm. Because there was just a little bit of tainted molecules that you know, a pet of Adrian Veidt gave him, just that little bit of push of loyalty that he may have needed.
Well, we also know that you know, like, next week he's all he wants to go do is play with a big ball of yarn, so
I did also happen to wonder a couple or a few minutes ago about the dead bodies of Adrian's scientists.
Oh yeah,
you know, and I mean, you know, when this disintegration type thing happens, where are they going? Is it even possible that, you know, maybe it's some kind of interdimensional thing, and phantom zony, maybe even,
right?
I think it's,
and
just
Dr. Manhattan is standing there. Why are these right, dead bodies yeah. here? And then he pulls himself back together and brings them back into our universe.
Yeah, could be like a limbo situation.
Mm. Yeah, limbo. Yeah.
I think of it as just like a giant exposed microwave.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just eradicating things without the cool sunglasses.
Yeah, that one is awfully exposed compared to... Yeah, that always
surprised me.
In the original de-atomization,
mm-hmm.
He's locked in to the room.
I'm curious, looking forward, that Watchmen show that they're going to be doing on HBO.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Is that like, it's in the future... Is that the theory everyone has? Is that it takes place in the future?
I feel like they've kind of said that it's almost like real time. Like, if Watchmen came out in 85, you know, and is set in 85, then here in 2019, it's been almost 34 years. So I think they've kind of hinted, or even flat out said, like, it basically picks up where are they now, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's hard to know exactly what that means. They certainly, in casting Jeremy Irons as Adrian Veidt, it certainly tells us that
he's
older.
Yeah. Yeah. So well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll see. I guess, like, yeah, I'm curious if, like, That's a good theory. It's a good theory to hold on to. Maybe it would have been too much to throw out here in the end, because then it would kind of taint Dr. Manhattan, and I guess for the story they don't want to do that right now. But like in the show, if they're in the future and Ozymandias wants to explain the whole cat atomizing part, maybe he got him.
Well, but the issue there is that it sure seems like Lindelof is taking more. It's much more a sequel in a sense to the book than it is to the movie. If and he's not even calling it a sequel, but
it happens in the book as well with the Bubastis.
Okay. Yeah.
Any final thoughts for the week or for this episode?
That's all I had. What, Mark?
Oh, I was gonna ask.
What were you gonna say?
What are your final thoughts? Do you have final thoughts in general?
Reiterating what we said. I like the ending of the movie a little bit better than I like the one in the book. I'm curious to see what this HBO Watchmen thing is gonna be.
Mm-hmm.
I am looking forward to the future, as they say in
Tomorrowland.
Meet the Robinsons. Keep moving forward.
Is that the Meet the Robots? Which one's Robin Williams? I think it's just called Robots.
Yeah.
Eric, any other notes on the week or on today?
And you have your.
Yeah, I'm going to hit some script differences for the week. Not too many to hit. A little bit of dialogue change. Nothing major. So going back to the start of the week, we have Manhattan is pursuing Adrian. As the this corridor with this intrinsic chamber or intrinsic field subtractor, as it starts to go off, Manhattan actually says, Adrian, don't, as they're both obliterated. So kind of takes away from that idea that Manhattan might welcome this new chapter in his life that we spoke about. Adrian right after says, you know, I really wasn't sure that would work. We still have, that's when Laurie comes up to Adrian and still calls him an asshole. And then this matches up with the book quite a bit more, where Adrian cries out. It's more of like he leaps and gives a hi-ya as if he's trying to attack her before she fires. And then that's when he manages to catch the bullet, like as he's mid-leap. So she shoots him. Dan actually says, Laurie, shoot him again. And it basically plays out the same as the movie up until Manhattan asks if the TV remote is some sort of ultimate weapon. He turns on the TV screens, and this is where throughout the script we've had lots of little tiny segments or cutaways or transition scenes where we'll see all around the world, like other countries are mobilizing their armies, and there's a lot of tension with China and India and Israel. So a lot of these, so it's not just US and Russia that are having all this political, strife. So here's the payoff, where the TV screens come on and all the news reports are coming in and sound bites, and India and Pakistan are immediately call for a truce, and China stands down, US withdraws forces, Israel agrees on a ceasefire. So I think that's kind of how they get around here in the script before it was just all about nuclear destruction between US and Russia. So here in the script, we do still get the I did it from Adrian, saying that he saved the earth from hell, and next I will elevate her to the vaulting stature of heaven. So not quite sure what he intends to do there, but he basically puts it on the rest of them and says, if you expose me and undo the peace that so many have just died for, morally, you're in checkmate, just like the comedian was. And the last little bit is just Rorschach, instead of saying keep your secrets, he says you're joking, of course, which matches up with the book. That's all of them for for this week, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Mark and Nathan, why don't you remind everyone where they can find you guys and all your different shows?
Yeah, you can find us on all social media at DCEU. We do the DC Cinematic Minute podcast. You can find that on anywhere you get your podcasts. We also do Doom Patrol Radio. You can find that online at Radio Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook group, the DC Cinematic Minute Listeners Society. You can chat with us, former guests of our shows, current listeners, all that jazz.
Yeah.
We're
currently doing Suicide Squad Minute for DC Cinematic Minute. But we did 143 episodes for all the minutes of Man of Steel, and we did all 183 minutes of Dawn of Justice. So there's plenty of content for you guys to catch up on if you haven't done so already. But as we look towards the future, there will be Wonder Woman Minute and some other films. but yeah, our biggest baby right now is Doom Patrol Radio. That's something that Nate and I are super passionate about. We want, we implore you guys to check it out. Please listen to it. It's a great show. Nate and I, inject so much passion into it because we love talking about Doom Patrol. So if anything, please go check out the first episode we did for the first episode that just came out, not too long ago. It's the pilot episode, season one, episode one. Please check it out. We spent 2 hours talking about a 1 hour episode show. So we just love it. It's great. It's phenomenal. We love talking about Doom Patrol. Like we said earlier, it's a miracle that a live action show even exists in our time. And we're able to talk about it. Please go listen to it. Thank you so much.
Very cool. I'm definitely going to check out the Doom Patrol and... We'll check out your show too.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's been a long time coming getting you guys on the show. I mean, I know we scheduled you guys way in advance, and I think something drew you guys to these later minutes, and I'm glad that glad we finally.
I feel like it's always hard to get guests for the last.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but it's like you schedule people and it's like, oh yeah, my first 12 weeks are booked. And then it's like you look at the end of the film and it's like, I don't know who we're going to schedule. And so I think if given the chance, I usually try to go for some towards the end because that's usually the bigger talking points. Like, oh, this is what we need to talk about. We need to talk about like the climax of it or like maybe like there's a big giant CGI battle that I want to talk about, but... It's usually cool stuff at the end of the movies.
Yeah. Just a quick reminder, you know, we Wednesday was the 10th anniversary of Watchmen, the movie here. And we drew a winner for our Before Watchmen hardcover giveaway on that Wednesday episode. And that winner was Rapa Newbie. So just a reminder to Rapa Newbie to reach out and claim your prize. So... Hopefully, Rapa Newbie is a up-to-date listener.
Yeah, if you don't claim it, I'm going to slide right in and take it from you.
So, otherwise, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Watchmen Minute.
And also, if you would, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Watchmen Minute. And we can talk about many different things all together. In the Facebook group, our Crimebusters Listener Society.
So, of course, big thanks to Mark and Nathan for joining us this week. And, of course, Alex Robinson for joining us Wednesday and Thursday.
Okay, so this has been a great week with those guys, all these guys. It was week...
34?
Yes.
It was week 34, and we'll be back on Monday for week 35, minute 171. And until then, who watches The Watchmen? We do.
We do.
Watchmen are over. Oh, them. First, we take Manhattan.